Welcome to Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson, an outreach ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California. This program is designed to take you back to basic principles for living found in the Word of God.
So hey everybody, turn up your radio. Listen to your soul cry the question why song makes you wonderful. Something you never seen before.
Pastor Brian is currently teaching through the book of Acts, where we've been following Paul's arrival in Jerusalem. And as we continue with part two of our study entitled Paul Goes to Jerusalem, we'll be picking up with James and the elder posing a serious question to Paul as we pick up in Acts chapter 21, verse 20, as Pastor Brian takes us back to basics.
And when they heard it, they glorified the Lord, and they said to him, "You see, brother, how many myriads of Jews there are who have believed, and they are all zealous for the law. But they have been informed about you, that you teach all the Jews who are among the Gentiles to forsake Moses, saying they ought to not circumcise their children, nor to walk according to the customs. What should we do about that?" That's the question that James and the elders are posing to Paul. And then they come up with this: "The assembly must certainly meet, for they will hear that you have come. Therefore," they said, "do what we tell you. We have four men who have taken a vow. Take them and be purified with them and pay their expenses so that they may shave their heads and that all may know that those things of which they were informed concerning you are nothing, but that you yourself also walk orderly and keep the law. But concerning the Gentiles who believe, we have written and decided that they should observe no such thing except that they should keep themselves from things offered to idols, from blood, from things strangled, and from sexual immorality." So they said, "Look, why don't you do this? Take these guys and pay their expenses. They've taken a vow." Now, it was probably the Nazirite vow that they had taken, and there was a substantial cost to it because there were the various offerings that needed to be made, and there were a number of things that would incur an expense. And oftentimes, what a person of means would do in those days is they would sponsor a person who was taking the vow, and they sort of, you know, felt that they were getting somewhat of the benefit of that as they would sponsor it. And so that's what they advise the Apostle Paul to do. Verse 26 says, "Then Paul took the men, and the next day, having been purified with them, entered the temple to announce the expiration of the days of purification, at which time an offering should be made for each one of them." So Paul went along with this. Now, some people have accused Paul of compromising here. Some people actually accused Paul of sinning here because he was going back and participating in the offerings in the temple. But that's not really the case. There were certain offerings that even the believers would still participate in, offerings of thanksgiving and consecration and things like that, that didn't really address the sin issue or give the impression that they weren't feeling the sacrifice of Christ was sufficient. So what Paul was doing here was he was condescending to their weaknesses. He was not compromising anything of any theological weight. He was really just going along with their cultural believes. And just, you know, letting go of a bit of his own liberty to sort of accommodate them culturally. Remember when Paul wrote to the Corinthians, he said to the Jews, he said, I've become all things to all men that I might win more people to the Lord. And then he said to the Jews, I became a Jew. And what Paul was expressing there is that he was not going to let non-essential things get in his way. He wasn't going to let some cultural issue stand in his way. So if it would lend itself to leading people to Christ for him to condescend to some of these cultural practices of the Jews that had no theological ramification, then Paul was willing to do that. He said, I've made myself the servant of everyone that I might by all means save some. And so he had that kind of an attitude. Paul was completely free. He was so free that he could even put himself sort of, you know, figuratively speaking, temporarily in bondage again for the benefit of somebody else. Paul's perspective of liberty was that I've got liberty, so I'm going to allow myself to go under maybe a situation that isn't that comfortable for me, but I'm going to go under it for the benefit of these people. Paul was truly willing to let go of his own personal convictions when it didn't have anything to do with theological matters and things that he felt comfortable with. He didn't push those things. He was ready to just say, you know what, that's fine. Let's just, you know, let's remove that stumbling block. If that's the problem, you know, if Paul is saying here, in essence, if they've got all these misunderstandings regarding me, they think that I'm against our forefathers and our heritage, I'll go ahead and do this and I'll clear up that misconception. We have to make sure that we have a clear division between what's really biblical and what's essential and what's more cultural and therefore non-essential. And one of the great curses really upon the church historically has been its inability to be flexible and to sort of, you know, not get caught in a cultural rut and to not put people in bondage over things that aren't really important or, you know, truly biblical in nature. And over again, that's happened in church history, where the church becomes rigid. And then everybody who doesn't conform to the church's culture is immediately, you know, seen as somebody who ought to be on the outside. It's like the missionaries who went from Europe into, you know, places like India or Africa or other destinations. The ones who would go and really seek to force a European culture upon these other peoples really, to a large degree, did a great disservice to those people. It was the ones who would go and not be concerned with spreading European culture or British culture or whatever it might have been at the time, but they were concerned with spreading the gospel. And so they weren't going into these countries to, you know, get them to adopt European culture or European civilization. They were going to just simply bring them the gospel. But they themselves oftentimes would suffer great persecution from their fellow Christians. So Paul, far from making a big mistake here, I think Paul is teaching us a valuable lesson. And the lesson is, don't let culture get in the way. Don't let something trivial and something non-essential stand in the way of us being able to communicate Christ to people. And if people have, like the Jews did, they had this, man, that, you know, the cultural thing was so huge to them, Paul just said, okay, fine. That's okay. As long as you're not seeing that as an obligatory thing or something that, you know, is giving you a greater standing before God than anyone else, then, you know, you just keep doing your cultural thing and I'll even, you know, do it with you at this point if it'll make things better and if it'll help the cause of Christ. And so, when 7 days were almost ended, the Jews from Asia seeing him in the temple, stirred up the whole crowd and laid hands on him, crying out, "Men of Israel, help! This is the man who teaches all men everywhere against the people, the law, and this place. And furthermore, he also brought Greeks into the temple, and he has defiled this holy place." Now, at the time, and we've mentioned it before, but we'll touch on it again, the Jews had just completely lost touch with what their mission in the world was. And they had developed an exclusive mentality, and they pretty much thought that God hated everybody and he loved them. And they actually had, the temple in Jerusalem had various divisions. The outer part of the temple was known as the court of the Gentiles. It just so happens that the money changers and all of those people that Jesus was really irritated with and, you know, threw their tables over and chased them out of there, just so happened that they set up their racket in the court of the Gentiles. So that's how much the Jews respected the court of the Gentiles. But separating the court of the Gentiles from the place where the Jews would gather was a wall with an inscription on it that warned that anyone not truly Jewish passing this boundary does so at the risk of their own life. And so now with that in mind, they're thinking that Paul has brought this Gentile into the temple, this Greek, and they're saying, you know, Paul is a blasphemer. Everything that we've told you about him is obviously true, you know. And these were the people that came from the area of Asia, Ephesus, that whole place where Paul had been ministering for those years. And, you know, they're saying, this is the man that we were telling you about. He's teaching against this place. And this is proof. He brought this Greek into the temple and he's defiled this holy place. It says, for they had previously seen Trophimus, the Ephesian, with him in the city, whom they supposed that Paul had brought into the temple. So because they saw Paul with Trophimus in the city, they concluded that he must have brought him into the temple, and that was how they were building his case. And so all the city was disturbed, and the people ran together, seized Paul, and dragged him out of the temple, and immediately the doors were shut. Now as they were seeking to kill him, news came to the commander of the garrison that all Jerusalem was in an uproar. Now, remember, this was a feast time, and so during this time, there would be 1,000 soldiers there based at the Antonia Fortress, which just butted up against the temple precinct. And they were there for the specific reason or purpose of quelling any sort of uprising that would happen. So they get word that there's an uprising there on the Temple Mount. And so they took the soldiers and centurions and they ran down to them. And when the Jews saw the commander and the soldiers, they stopped beating Paul. So evidently they were just going to beat him to death. Then the commander came near and took him and commanded him to be bound with two chains. And he asked who he was and what he had done. And some among the multitude cried one thing and some another. So when he could not ascertain the truth because of the tumult, he commanded him to be taken to the barracks. And when he reached the stairs, he had to be carried by the soldiers because of the violence of the mob. For the multitude of the people followed after him, crying out, saying, "Away with him!" Then as Paul was about to be led into the barracks, he said to the commander, "May I speak to you?" He replied, "Can you speak Greek? Are you not the Egyptian who some time ago stirred up a rebellion and led 4,000 assassins out into the wilderness?" Now about 54 AD, there was, according to Josephus, an Egyptian who had gathered around him a band of assassins. They would hide these daggers in their garments and they would go into the midst of a crowd and they would just start randomly killing people. And this Egyptian had a vision that he would come upon the city of Jerusalem with his band of assassins and the walls of Jerusalem would immediately fall and they would overthrow the Romans. And so, of course, when the Romans heard about this, they took up action against this individual and they pretty much slaughtered those that had teamed up with him, but he actually had escaped And so this commander Lysias here, he can't get any kind of accurate information about who his prisoner is. He thinks he's the Egyptian assassin. And so Paul says, I am a Jew from Tarsus in Cilicia, a citizen of no mean city. Cilicia was a very prominent city in the empire. And I implore you, permit me to speak to the people. So when he had given him permission, Paul stood on the stairs and motioned with his hand to the people. Now, here's the amazing thing about Paul. I mean, he's just about beaten to death. And the soldiers actually have to, you know, put him up on their shoulders and carry him up the steps because the mob's still grabbing at him, trying to get a hold of him again to rip him to shreds. And instead of, as you would think that most people would do, you know, hey, get me out of this place, man. Protect me from these people. Paul says, wait a second. Let me speak to these people. Give me one more shot at it. And so he says, well, can you speak Greek? I'm a Hebrew. I'm a Jew. And so he gives him permission. And so he stands on the stairs and he motions with his hand. And notice a great silence fell upon them. And he spoke to them in the Hebrew language. So to me, it almost appears that some work of the Spirit happened right here to take a mob that was in the state of mind that these people were evidently in, wanting to rip him to shreds and shouting, away with him, and then suddenly for there to be dead silence. It seems like the Lord moved upon this crowd to give Paul the opportunity that he had always wanted to have. This was the moment that the apostle had been waiting for. He had longed for years and years and years. If he could just get back to Jerusalem, if he could just talk to the Jews, and now look, he's got an audience of thousands. This is the moment that he'd hoped would come. And so he says, brethren and fathers, hear my defense before you now. And when they heard that he spoke in the Hebrew language, they kept all the more silent. Then he said, I am indeed a Jew, born in Tarsus of Cilicia, but brought up in this city at the feet of Gamaliel. Now, Gamaliel was one of the greatest rabbis of all time and a very prominent man who had passed away probably about 5 years before this event. So taught according to the strictness of our father's law and was zealous toward God, as you all are today. Paul says, look, I can relate. I'm a Jew. I was brought up by Gamaliel. I know exactly how you feel. Listen, I persecuted this way to death, binding and delivering into prison both men and women, as also the high priest bears me witness and all the council of the elders, from whom I also received letters to the brethren, and went to Damascus to bring in chains even those who were there to Jerusalem to be punished. Now it happened as I journeyed and came near Damascus at about noon, suddenly a great light from heaven shone around me, and I fell to the ground and heard a voice saying to me, Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? So I answered, who are you, Lord? And he said to me, I am Jesus of Nazareth, whom you are persecuting. And those who were with me indeed saw the light and were afraid, but they did not hear the voice of him who spoke to me. So I said, what shall I do, Lord? And the Lord said to me, arise and go into Damascus, and there you will be told all things which are appointed for you to do. And since I could not see for the glory of that light, being led by the hand of those who were with me, I came into Damascus. Then a certain Ananias, a devout man according to the law, having a good testimony with all the Jews who dwelt there, came to me, and he stood and said to me, Brother Saul, receive your sight. And at that same hour I looked up at him. Then he said, the God of our fathers has chosen you that you should know his will and see the just one and hear the voice of his mouth, for you will be his witness to all men of what you have seen and heard. And he says, and now why are you waiting? Arise and be baptized and wash away your sins, calling on the name of the Lord. And now it happened when I returned to Jerusalem and was praying in the temple, that I was in a trance and saw him saying to me, make haste and get out of Jerusalem quickly, for they will not receive your testimony concerning me. So I said, Lord, they know. They know that in every synagogue I imprisoned and beat those who believe on you. And when the blood of your martyr Stephen was shed, I also was standing by, consenting to his death and guarding the clothes of those who were killing him. Then he said to me, depart, for I will send you far from here to the Gentiles. And they listened until this word. And then they raised their voices and said, away with such a fellow from the earth, for he is not fit to live. Then as they cried out and tore off their clothes and threw their dust into the air, the commander ordered him to be brought into the barracks and said that he should be examined under scourging so that he might know why they shouted so against him. So Paul, the opportunity that he waited for his entire life has finally come to share the gospel with his Jewish brethren. And he's got this captive audience. They're silent. They're listening attentively. And he's going on and on. And then he mentions this one word, Gentiles. He had them up until that point. Now, the commander is baffled because, of course, Paul's speaking to them in their native tongue. So the commander has no idea what he's saying, but all he knows is that he had their attention. It was a captive audience. It was a cooperative audience. And then all of a sudden, the same frenzy was whipped up again by just, you know, something that he said. So he ordered him to be brought into the barracks and said that he should be examined under scourging so that he might know why they shouted so against him. And as they bound him with thongs, Paul said to the centurion who stood by, is it lawful for you to scourge a man who is a Roman and uncondemned? And when the centurion heard that, he went and told the commander, saying, take care what you do, for this man is a Roman. You see, it was absolutely against the law to bind a Roman citizen. And the commander was frightened with a good reason, because he could not only lose his position, but it would be even within the realm of possibility that he could lose his life for mistreating a Roman citizen. So the commander came and he said to him, tell me, are you a Roman? He said, yes. The commander answered, with a large sum I obtained this citizenship. And Paul said, I was born a citizen. And then immediately those who were about to examine him withdrew from him. And the commander was also afraid after he found out that he was a Roman and because he had bound him. The next day, because he wanted to know for certain why he was accused by the Jews, he released him from his bonds and commanded the chief priest and all the council to appear and brought Paul down and set him before them. So, just as the Holy Spirit had warned, so now things have developed. And I'm sure that as Paul was there in his prison cell at this point, he probably was the most downcast man in the world at that time, because he would have thought that he failed God. God finally gave me the opportunity and I messed it up. Why? Why did I say Gentile? I had them. They were listening. They were eating out of my hand, and then I said it. And I'm sure Paul went into just an utter state of condemnation during that time. I can just imagine it. And we've all probably had, of course, not experiences of that magnitude, but we've probably all had experiences where we've done something or said something or blown an opportunity, and you just, those are the kinds of things that just haunt you. But you know, you'll find that the Lord was not nearly as hard on Paul as he was on himself. And the Lord appears to Paul in his dejected state, and he says, Paul, be encouraged. For just as you've testified for me in Jerusalem, you're going to do it in Rome as well. You know, Paul probably thought that he did not testify at all. He blew it. But Jesus said, no, you testified for me in Jerusalem, and you'll do it in Rome as well. And my point is this as we close. Even if we say the wrong thing, even if we blow the opportunity of the century, God can take care of it. I thank God that he's not limited to my performance to get his job done.
We'll continue with more of our study through the book of Acts in our next lesson as we take a serious look at righteousness, self-control, and judgment. But right now, I'd like to remind you that if you missed any part of this study, or perhaps you'd like to review it again at a more convenient time, you can do so by simply calling us toll-free at 1-800-733-6443 and request the message entitled, Paul Goes to Jerusalem. Or if you prefer, simply refer to it by resource number BT3137. Once again, our toll-free number is 1-800-733-6443. And for those of you that prefer to write, you can address your correspondence to Back to Basics, P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. And when writing or calling, be sure to ask for a free catalog of available resources from Back to Basics, and please include the call letters of this station with your correspondence. You're also invited to visit our website at backtobasicsradio.com, where you can listen to archived messages by Pastor Brian, or subscribe to our podcasts and vodcasts. Once again, that's backtobasicsradio.com.
Turn up your radio.
Back to Basics is sponsored by Calvary Chapel of Costa Mesa, California.